listening to KMOX.
This is Jen.
And welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm not sure what happened there. The our cart machine just
died.
And Josh just walked in, so he can worry about it for the rest of the show. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Laron Landis. Laron, well, happy Father's Day. And the late Patty Fink is taking Memorial Day off, and she will be on time next week for this week's show. Our guest today is Lynn Scher. Lynn, are you there?
Oh, she is now.
Hi, Lynn, are you there?
I am indeed. You there too?
Yes, we're here. And we're real excited to have you. Lynn Scher, of course, is the award-winning broadcaster who was with ABC for 30 years. She's written a number of other books, including America the Beautiful, The Catherine Ann Bates Story, and Failure is Impossible about Susan B. Anthony. Her newest book, I just finished reading, it is Sally Ride, America's, and Laron has the book in front of him across the table, America's
First Woman in Space.
Thank you, because I could not read that upside down from this distance. Lynn, I really love the book. How did you get to know Sally Ride?
I first got to know Sally in 1981 when ABC News asked me to join the team covering the upcoming new space shuttle at NASA. And I was sent down to the Johnson Space Center in Houston in January of that year. The shuttle, you recall, was going to make its maiden voyage in April of 81, and we were all revving up for this first re-entry into space for the United States. So I went down there, and my first assignment was to do a piece on the so-called new breed of astronaut. In other words, the people who are proving that you didn't necessarily need the right plumbing to have the right stuff.
Uh-huh.
So there were women, there were minorities, there were a couple of African-Americans, there was an Asian-American. And we asked NASA for a couple of representative individuals who represented this so-called new breed of astronaut, and Sally was one of the people that they supplied, and I interviewed her for the piece, and the two of us just hit it off and became fast friends and were friends for 30 years. And she, of course, is somebody that I also covered all that time.
Yeah, and isn't that just odd wording, that new breed, as if women are a different breed?
Yeah, well, I mean, in fairness, that was our ABC News term, but it was, well, it was the idea that, you know, finally NASA had, you know, essentially entered the 20th century and, mm-hmm. and recognized that you could have people flying in space who didn't have to be white males with crew cuts with a military background. And certainly the pilots were largely from a military background, and of course they were all flyers. But eventually there were women that could do that as well. But this was a big departure for the space agency, and we wanted to take advantage of showing that off and saying how both how well they had done and also why it took them so long to get there. And Sally could not have been a better representative for all those things.
She always was. I mean, she always struck me as just an interesting person who represented the space agency just really well. Whenever she was speaking, she could speak about whatever was going on just so clearly and in a way that was interesting, engagingly.
Well, it's true. Sally was immensely articulate, and I suspect a lot of that has to do with the fact that not only did she have a PhD in astrophysics, but her undergraduate, she had a double degree. She had physics and English. She was a Shakespearean,
mm-hmm.
and she loved language, and she knew how to express herself, and I think that made a huge difference. I really do.
Yeah.
All of the astronauts that I met certainly are immensely qualified, extraordinarily well-educated. Not all of them can express themselves as well as they'd like to because they're used to either military parlance or lab talk. And being able to communicate with the American public was a gift that Sally certainly had.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn.
There you are.
Lynn, you're talking about this new breed and NASA's catching up, you know, wanting a more diverse astronauts and so forth. In your book, you talk about how they really went out of their way. I'm looking here in your book, and it says minority female candidates were really encouraged to apply. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that, because it seems like they really did make a push to have different people apply outside of just, you know, a white man, so much so that they even enlisted Nichelle Nichols from Star Trek.
Right.
To
Captain Uhura, exactly.
Exactly. I thought that's kind of really interesting. If you could talk a little bit about that.
I guess the way I would put it is it took them a long time to get there. This was 1976 when they first put out the call for the new shuttle astronauts, including women and minorities. And by then, a lot of the nation had already figured out that it was time to start opening these doors. The space agency took a little bit longer, but once they embraced it, they did, for the most part, embrace it. And there were people that were pushing all along to get women and minorities involved. And one of them was, of course, Carolyn Huntoon, who at the time was the highest-ranking woman at the Johnson Space Center in management. And she was out there hustling like crazy. I mean, she really wanted to get as many women to apply as thought they were interested. And she really reached out, and she went to, you know, retirement communities so that she could talk to grandparents and say, tell your daughters, tell your granddaughters this is something they could do. She went to, you know, they went to Lions Clubs. They went to Girl Scouts. They went all over the place. And I give the NASA folks a huge amount of credit at that point for saying, if we're going to do it, let's do it right, and let's make it clear that we really are interested. This is not just a showcase thing.
And how do they find Sally?
I would like to say they found her by one of those outreach. Actually, the truth is they did, when it comes right down to it. Sally Ride, in January of 1977, she missed all the ads. She never saw any posters. She never heard anything or saw anything on television. And now she's in her last year of trying to get her PhD thesis written. And she's at Stanford University in California. And she goes to the student union one morning to wake up, gets herself a cup of coffee and a donut, and picks up the Stanford Union, which is the student newspaper, of course. And there, right above the fold, is a headline that says, NASA to recruit women. And the way that happened is NASA had reached out to a woman who was in charge. This is all a lesson in why all these things matter and why you have to do it this way in order to make a difference. NASA had reached out to the woman that was head of one of the major women's organizations and asked her for some suggestions for names of women who might want to apply. Instead of that, she said, let me do something better. She calls up the student union. She says, why don't you do an interview with me, and I will talk about this new thing. And sure enough, the student union does the interview, puts it on the front page. Sally looks at it, reads the article, reads the requirements for mission specialist, which is the new category of astronauts who were not pilots, and the category is all about a science degree and adventurous and all of that. Sally says to herself, I can do that, puts down her coffee and her donut, immediately goes to get stationery and a pen and an envelope and a stamp, it was that long ago, and applies immediately to become an astronaut. This is a woman who never considered going into NASA, only wanted to teach, only wanted to do research in physics and astrophysics, wanted to be famous, wanted to win the Nobel Prize in physics. But instead, boom, just like that, she turns on a dime because she sees this headline. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't tell you that outreach programs work, nothing does.
Right. Earlier, was it in her high school yearbook that she was listed as somebody who was going to become an astronaut?
It was never listed there. The only time it appeared, and Sally, through her lifetime, never remembered having this conversation, when she was in a undergraduate, she briefly attended Swarthmore College in Pennsylvania. And she won some tennis tournaments. Sally actually started out wanting to be a tennis pro, turned off of that because she always said the reason she couldn't become a tennis pro was, quote, my forehand. She sort of understood she was never going to make it to the very tippy top. Mm-hmm. At any event, she quit Swarthmore to go try to be a tennis pro. But while she was at Swarthmore, she had won a major tennis tournament. And whoever interviewed her somehow wrangled out of her that she might want to be an astronaut. Again, I'm telling you, Sally never remembered this, mm-hmm. but it was printed in that article that someday she wanted to be an astronaut. And Sally always maintained she had no recollection of that interview or of telling that to the reporter, mm-hmm. but there it was nonetheless.
It had to have been in her mind. And just going back to the new breed, one of the things that occurs to me is that the early spaceships, you know, even Apollo that went to the moon, had the computer capacity of a pocket calculator. So you really did have to be a pilot to fly those, and there weren't, you know, there weren't many women who were, or were there any women who were being trained as pilots at the time?
Well, there were indeed women who might have qualified. The problem for women was that NASA decided the government decided in 1958, when NASA was essentially created, and President Eisenhower was the president, and he said, look, if we're going to start human spaceflight, let's cut some corners here, because there was a rush. It was all about beating the Soviet Union, beating the Russians to the moon. He said, let's only allow people to apply who are already vetted for security and all that sort of stuff. Let's only allow people to apply who have already faced danger and understand what that could mean, and also who have therefore been to test pilot school. And that automatically excluded anyone who wasn't a male in the military, mm-hmm. and for the most part, white males. So the first pool of candidates were all these jet pilot, test pilot, military guys. Women had no access to this and therefore could not apply. There were, however, many women who were extremely talented pilots, largely as a result of the work they had done in World War II, and quite a number of them wanted to apply, and some did, and they just never got very far. So NASA never said the jobs were for men only, but they didn't have to, because the requirements made it that way.
Made it that way, and that's what I meant when I said there were no women. Of course there were women pilots,
right.
Just not in the military
Also, it was hard for women to get experience flying jets, because they really weren't allowed to do that for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Right. The big surprise about Sally Ride was in her obituary. It just wasn't public knowledge that she had been in a relationship with another woman for 27 years. Now, you knew her. You were a friend of hers, and you didn't know either, did you?
I did not know. This is something that Sally and her partner, Tam O'Shaughnessy, chose to keep private. Tam prefers the word private to the word secret.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fair, but I also do think that they did try to keep it secret to an extent. This was, of course, a different era. Sally is coming out of NASA, which barely recognizes women, let alone mm-hmm. people in same-sex relationships.
Right.
And I think to some extent she was trying to protect NASA, interestingly enough,
mm-hmm.
that she would protect the space agency rather than her own relationship, but she managed to do both. I think it's possible that when she retired from NASA in 1987, this, of course, was after the Challenger explosion, it was maybe in part because the relationship was there and she didn't want to be exposed any more than she needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, some years later, they started their company, Sally Ride Science, with a couple of other friends, partners, and they were concerned that starting a company which was to get girls interested in science and math, that maybe getting corporate funding as two gay women was not something that was going to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kept it quiet then as well. So for a large number of reasons, they chose to do it that way. And yes, it's true, I knew her reasonably well for a long time, and I never knew specifically about the relationship.
Did you know Tam, though, before the death?
I had met Tam. I knew that Sally and Tam had written children's books together.
Okay.
I did not know they were in that relationship. I didn't know they were living in the same house. And Sally would occasionally stay with me in New York City, and we would go out for dinner and have long conversations, and she never said a word about it. Just the way she chose to do it.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? But, you know, also with celebrity, She was certainly a celebrity, but in an odd category. I mean, how many other science celebrities are there? So her life was not scrutinized in the same way that somebody else's would be.
Certainly not after she left NASA, but you know as well as I do that if she had stayed at NASA while she, and that's at the point at which, when she left NASA, she had already formed the relationship with Tam, and if she had stayed at NASA, it would have been almost impossible to hide it at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And perhaps had she made it public knowledge, that probably would have put her back in the spotlight.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. Sally was very good friends with Billie Jean King from the time Sally was a youngster playing playing in tournament tennis. And Billie, a couple of years older, had been one of her sort of mentors. And there's no record of this. Sally never commented on it. Sally never talked to anyone about it. But Billie Jean herself, who also never talked to Sally about this, Billie Jean is sure that when she, Billie Jean, was forced to come out, when she was outed, as you recall, in that palimony suit by the woman that she'd had a relationship with while Billie Jean was still married to a man, and then Billie Jean, of course, lost all of her endorsements overnight and had to essentially start over.
Mm-hmm.
And Billie Jean told me that she is sure that that must have had some effect on Sally, because Sally certainly would have watched the news and saw what happened and seen what happened to Billie at that point.
Sure.
So I think, you know, she was looking around. She saw the way the world was. It was, again, it was a different era. And I think without knowing, because she never talked about it, I think she just chose to keep things to herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Avoid whatever controversy or whatever publicity. Don't forget, Sally was, in her DNA, an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that Myers-Briggs psychological scale.
Sure.
And on the one side, you're an I for introvert, and on the other side, you're an E for extrovert.
Mm-hmm.
Sally was very much an introvert. She did not like huge crowds. The fact that she was the public face of NASA for so long and made all those speeches all of her life was a major act of will on her part. She really preferred small crowds, being alone or with one or two people. Didn't like all the adulation, but she did it because she understood it was part of the job. And I think this would have, if she had come out, if she had let the world know how she was living her life, I think it might have destroyed the last bit of privacy that she had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We need to take a break. We're talking to Lynn Scherr. Her new book is Sally Ride, America's First Woman Astronaut. We'll be back. Lynn, stay with us. It's just a quickie break. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
If you're going on summer vacation but aren't planning on taking your old car with you, why not donate it to the KNON Vehicle Donation Program? Just call 877-KNON-AUTO and we'll arrange everything from picking up the vehicle to providing the necessary paperwork. Your donation will help support KNON. 877-KNON-AUTO or on the web at knon.org.
Hi, I'm Cleve Jones, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly, the world's oldest, longest-running gay and lesbian radio show on anywhere in the world. We're talking to Lynn Scherr. Her new book is Sally Ride. Is the book actually out yet, Lynn?
Oh, yeah. The book came out a week and a half ago.
Okay.
And I'm thrilled to say, as has been enjoying really spectacular reviews, so I'm very, very happy about that.
Well, and it deserves great reviews. It's just, it reads nicely. You really feel like you know her by the end of the book.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. Thank you. I sort of tried to peel the onion away as carefully as I could, and you know, I was walking a fine line. Sally was my friend, but I'm also a reporter at heart, and I was doing the book as a journalist, as a biographer. And I wanted to be fair, and that's what I tried to do.
Well, and it's what I was expecting, because I read your book, America the Beautiful, also, and I actually met you when you were down here for the event at the Women's Museum.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if you've heard, but the Women's Museum closed about a year or so ago. It just never took off.
Sorry to hear that. It was a terrific place.
Yeah, it was a wonderful old building. The building's still there, and they're still trying to figure out what to do with it. So, But again, that was just a wonderful book. Catherine Ann Bates, who wrote America the Beautiful, Catherine Lee Bates,
right.
Also lesbian.
Yeah.
Susan B. Anthony, also lesbian.
Well, we don't know that about Susan B. Anthony.
We don't know that for sure.
That's an assumption.
Okay.
We do not know.
Okay. See, that's the journalist in her.
Catherine lived with another woman, another Catherine, for many years, and that was, of course, at a time when lots of women lived together, some in lesbian relationships, some not.
Mm-hmm.
It was oddly, interestingly, much more accepted around the turn of the last century than it was in this country, certainly, lately. But yes, again, never publicly, no one used the L word, if you will, with Catherine Lee Bates and her partner. But she wrote poems about her, and at some of the women's colleges, it was sort of a given. You know, there was that term, the Boston marriage. And Boston marriage really was everybody doing a sort of wink-wink while they're together without ever really knowing what was going on. But that was very much a love relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Susan B. Anthony, we do not know for sure what her sexuality was.
Mm-hmm.
She never talked about it. There's some indication there might have been a relationship with a woman named Anna Dickinson, but there is absolutely no documentation whatsoever about that.
Huh. Okay.
Lynn, you were talking about, it's very interesting you referring to Sally being very introverted. And I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about the fact that how does she handle, or how was it, how did she handle being the first American female in that went into space? Was it a big deal to her, or was it just like, no, I'm just doing my job? Growing up, well, first of all, growing up, I always thought she was the first woman in space, period. But then I later learned that there were two Russian women that went before her. But it was history nonetheless. Was it a big deal to her, or just, again, if she was just doing her job? How did she handle that?
Mostly she was just doing her job. She went to NASA after she saw that article, and after she signed up and after she got accepted, she went to fly. She just thought it would be the coolest thing in the world to fly in space. When she was accepted as an astronaut candidate, that was the first class of shuttle astronauts in 1978. There were 35 of them. Among those 35, there were six women. So Sally is one of six extraordinarily talented, well-educated, wonderful women. It was clear to all the women that one of them was going to be first.
Mm-hmm.
They were not the best of friends. They all had their own lives, but they were good buddies, and they stuck together when they needed to. When Sally was chosen, I think they made the right choice. I think any one of the women would have been terrific, but Sally was a particularly good choice. I think, I know what happened is they all, again, banded together to make certain choices about what they took up into, what women would take into space with them, what women would be doing in space. What Sally did very quickly was appreciate that she was, in fact, about to become a role model. She didn't sign up for it for that reason. She had no intention of being a role model, but she saw it happening, and I think she stepped up to that job absolutely magnificently.
Mm-hmm.
She understood, you know, she said before she flew, I had an interview with her one-on-one, and I said, do you feel any pressure? This is a month before she flew, now we're in 1983. And she said, I do feel pressure not to mess up.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, she wanted to not mess up for the crew. Going and flying in space is a team situation. She didn't want to mess up for the mission, for NASA, for the United States, for the future of human spaceflight. But mostly, she didn't want to mess up because she knew that if she messed up, someone would say, oh, no woman can ever be an astronaut. And if she did well, they would say, you know what? Women are just as qualified as men.
Mm-hmm.
And so she performed perfectly and really opened the door for everyone after her.
Yeah, and in fact, she was known as, or that crew was known as Sally Ride and the other people on the flight.
Well, yeah, my favorite sign at the Kennedy Space Center when she flew in June of 1983 was, actually, it's just sort of 2 days from now will be the 31st anniversary, June 18th, 3 days from now. My favorite sign was a marquee, a bank marquee, and it said, she was, of course, one woman in a crew of five, so there were four men. And the sign read, Ride, Sally, Ride, and the rest of you guys can tag along, too.
But that's how it was handled. I mean, that's what the publicity was. Shuttle flights were almost becoming routine, but all of a sudden, this one was exciting.
Yeah, I think that was part of NASA's motivation. I think NASA which has always had an eye to public relations, mm-hmm. understood that you've got to keep the public interested. Sally flew on what was called STS, Space Transportation System 7, STS 7. It was the seventh shuttle flight. Right after her, STS 8, was Guy Bluford, the first African-American astronaut to fly. Mm-hmm. So NASA understood they had to keep people interested along with adhering to what was by then the letter of the law, which was get women and minorities involved in everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and by involving more people, I mean, they were getting the best and the brightest. They were getting what they needed. It wasn't that they were compromising anything. They were they had a larger pool to draw from, so it just made more sense.
Totally. There was no lowering of standards whatsoever.
Of course.
I would suggest the standards were raised a little bit when they got a lot of the women and the minorities in there. But yes, you're exactly right. No lowering of standards whatsoever.
Yeah. The only time NASA ever proposed to, I think, lower their standards was 1990 when they proposed banning any homosexuals from flying, which was tied into – that was before Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but gays in the military were given dishonorable discharges at the time. They could actually be arrested.
And that's because the military was tied with NASA? Sort of?
No. NASA was started very deliberately by President Eisenhower – as a civilian agency. There is absolutely no military mandate. There is no military official part of NASA. The fact that military pilots were recruited to fly, they essentially, they would wind up resigning their commissions or go back or put them on hold or whatever. But they were, the military and NASA were meant to be separate. In fact, when the shuttle was built and the military learned they had to fly all their satellites on the shuttle, that they couldn't launch their own expendables to fly satellites, they were very annoyed.
Hmm.
So no, there's not officially a tie-in in that regard.
Okay.
But certainly the same mentality in terms of what you're talking about carried over, although, right. You know, NASA never had any official regulation about homosexuality. There was never a don't ask, don't tell. There was never keep them out officially. Was there talk behind the scenes? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Was there concern among some not to let gays into the military, into NASA? Yes, but this was all at a level of way far from anything official.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
And now NASA has its Gay and Lesbian Employees Association, so
now they do. And
yeah,
you know, it's interesting. I did I realized that part of what made the news about Sally's sexual orientation such a surprise to people after she died was that I don't believe ever before the word astronaut and the word lesbian had appeared in the same sentence.
Right.
This is not an agency, NASA, where anything other was considered. You know, you were mm-hmm. meant to fit into one square originally, and then they enlarged that square a little bit, and only now is there an LGBT group at the Johnson Space Center where I will, by the way, be speaking in a couple of weeks, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the kind of terrific progress we ought to be seeing everywhere. But it took NASA a little bit longer, but they're there, and they're getting there, and I think that's really commendable.
Mm-hmm. It is, because it's showing where they came from. But it's amazing, and especially this year, just to see the progress. It's just been phenomenal watching it week after week, marriage equality passing one state after the other. So we're almost at a point where we forget that, oh yeah, just a couple of years ago, just not accepted.
So I couldn't agree with you more. And yeah. I as I say in the book, I said to Tam O'Shaughnessy, Sally's partner at one point, do you think that you and Sally missed the revolution?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, how come you didn't realize it would be okay at now? And she said, you know, we were both working so hard that we didn't realize that we might have been able to live our lives publicly without any question whatsoever.
But
and isn't that too bad?
Yeah, it is too bad, because you know, hiding or covering, it just takes too much effort. It's too hard to do. Although one of the things that, I forgot who it was who brought this up, one of the things they were doing was writing children's books, and they were worried that somewhere in the Midwest or right here in Texas, you might have some parents who are going to say, oh, that's by the lesbian. We don't want to read that science book.
Well, you know, there's no indication that they actually had that conversation together, mm-hmm. but I have to tell you, I believe that has to have been on their mind.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
sure.
I grew up in an era, you know, when, well, but let me just do it about Tam first. Tam does tell me, and it's in the book, she also played junior tennis. She and Sally had actually met when they were teenagers, but they were just friends for a long time. She remembers being told as a child, stay away from a certain woman on the tennis circuit because she's a lesbian.
Oh, no.
Horror. And, you know, I remember being told similar things at summer camp, and the implication was, if a lesbian ever got a hold of another woman, she would corrupt you and turn you, and you would never escape. And this was common.
Wow.
This was common, and it terrified people.
Yeah. It yes.
Wow.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And how ridiculous, and how stupid, and how nice that we at least seem to be pretty well beyond that at this point in our development as social creatures, right?
Yeah, well, not so much here in Texas. But
well, you know what? I live in New York.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. And my New York relatives can't understand why. Okay, you can't get married in Texas. Come up to New York. We want a wedding in our family. So.
Nice.
But, yeah.
Did Sally talk any about what was it like being one of the few females on a space crew? As far as the treatment from her male colleagues?
She did indeed, and she said there was absolutely no difference whatsoever from the way they've treated anybody else. She was perfectly comfortable. In fact, a number of years later, she testified or sent a written testimony. She couldn't go in person when there were some hearings being held when the military was trying to make its big decision about whether to allow women into combat and to give them equal status with men. And Sally wrote a testimony that was read by her co-pilot on STS-7, Rick Houck, a military guy. And in it, Sally said that there had been no difference whatsoever in treatment and that there were no problems with a male crew and a single female, or in her second flight, all male with two women. She said, we worked things out. And then, because she was Sally, she never in 100 years would have said, come on, you guys, let women into the military. What she says is, I think this has some relevance to the issue you're discussing. In other words, yeah. I'm not going to tell you what to do, and I'm going to be very scientific about this.
Mm-hmm.
And the underlying message is, of course it has relevance, but she would never come out and say
she
that.
She wouldn't say that, right. After she left NASA, she went back to Stanford for 2 years, was it?
A year and a half for a fellowship program, right.
And then there was talk about hiring her as a professor, but they decided, no, she hasn't published anything. She was then hired at UC San Diego, both as a professor, but also California has a space program of some sort.
The California Space Institute that she was asked to run, yes.
And she was asked to run it. And so that was really a much better fit for her, probably, insofar as using her talent. But isn't it interesting that a school like Stanford would be so tied to certain standards, like, you know, publish or perish, that they wouldn't hire somebody with that kind of experience? That can't be duplicated.
It's a little odd.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, academic departments, as I'm sure you're aware, have
sure.
their own decisions and their own standards. And it caused quite a little brouhaha at the time. The extraordinary thing is that the people around Sally and the people close to Sally were furious at Stanford for not taking her. This was her beloved alma mater. She had performed so wonderfully. She had just been at this think tank and done a great job. But everyone else was furious. Sally never evinced any anxiety, any concern, any angst, any anger. She pivots. She was a great pivoter. She goes to the University of California at San Diego and lives in La Jolla for the next 25 or so years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the way she lived her life. Once a decision was made, she never looked back. She didn't hold grudges, just moved on, probably saved her a fortune in psychotherapy bills, you know. But
good for her, because she actually got a position that I think was probably closer to using her talents.
Well, not only did she get a position that was closer to using her talents, she was in a climate that was always her preferred climate.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with the climate in Stanford, but Sally really liked it warm. And UCSD and the ocean, it was just perfect for her.
Yeah, yeah. You know, as I was reading that, I was thinking back on college, and some of my best classes were just some odd things from people who weren't there because they published. They were there because they were experts in what they were doing.
Right. Well, Sally proved to be a wonderful professor at UCSD. I spoke to a number of her former students who told me how engaging she was, how they understood things for the first time. One young woman told me that Sally had made her understand about raindrops in a way that she never appreciated before.
Hmm.
And it really is quite beautiful to see. And then there's a fellow who now worked at NASA and now works somewhere else in Houston near JSC, the Johnson Space Center. And he said to me, you know, she really was happiest teaching and being a physicist. He said to me, at root, Sally was a scientist who took a detour through space.
Hmm.
So being at UCSD and teaching was really, for a long period, what she really wanted to be doing.
And that makes sense for somebody who doesn't like, you know, crowds, but is happy speaking to smaller groups. That does seem to be more her personality.
Right. And also, someone who likes doing the research, someone who likes sitting there with a pile of papers and a pile of notes and a computer screen, or sitting back in the library stacks the way we used to do when people used real books instead of pixels.
Mm-hmm.
This is what made her happiest, and this was her comfort zone, certainly.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, reading your book, I did get several people who kind of looked at me like I was nuts, but I was actually reading the book, which I love.
Oh.
I read books, and I don't do...
Thank you.
Yeah.
I hope people do... I mean, I'm happy to have people read it in any form, but I love the cover. Of course, I had nothing to do with it except to approve it.
Yeah,
but
it's a great picture.
I think they did a great design with the cover, and the pictures, of course, in there are quite wonderful. I carefully picked them all out.
Mm-hmm. Where did you get a lot of those pictures from? From her family and from...
Yes. Well, obviously, a lot come from NASA, one of the great resources, and they couldn't have been better to work with. And then her family was very generous. Her sister, her mother, her partner, and then there were some other sources. I had to purchase a few from agencies, but it was a lot of fun putting the pictures together.
We're talking to Lynn Scherr. Her new book is Sally Ride. Sally Ride, of course, the first woman astronaut. Lynn, stick with
first
us. We're going to take just another quickie break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM in Dallas.
If you're going on summer vacation but aren't planning on taking your old car with you, why not donate it to the KNON Vehicle Donation Program? Just call 877-KNON-AUTO and we'll arrange everything from picking up the vehicle to providing the necessary paperwork. Your donation will help support KNON. 877-KNON-AUTO or on the web at knon.org.
Want to find out about upcoming events at KNON? Want to see pictures from past events or need information about the station? Then you need to like the official KNON Facebook page. It's easy to find. Just go to facebook.com/KNON893. It's the KNON 89.3 FM station-produced page for Facebook. It's the easiest way to keep up with what's going on here at KNON. Like us and share with your friends today. That's facebook.com/KNON893. Accept no substitutions.
This is Janice McCall from TCU, and I listen to the Lambda Week on 89.3 KNON FM, Dallas.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis. Patty will be back with us next week. We're talking to Lynn Scherr. She's the award-winning broadcaster from ABC. Most people know you, Lynn, from 2020. Lauren.
Lynn, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about Sally's passing away from pancreatic cancer. You didn't know that she was sick?
Correct. I did not know. Sally was very good at keeping secrets, you know. Mm-hmm. When she wanted something not to be known, she managed for that to happen. And she was diagnosed in March of 2011. First, she and Tam kept it very close. Then they informed one or two members of the family, and then they expanded it to a very small number of close friends. There can't have been more than 8 or 9 or 10 people who knew outside of the hospital. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that I was in La Jolla in April of 2012 on promoting my last book, which is my book, Swim, Where We Love the Water, and I said to Sally, I'm going to be in La Jolla at a bookstore, the wonderful Warwick's bookstore. I would love to see you. And I got an enthusiastic email. Great, let's meet for a drink. We had a date to meet then. And the day I got to La Jolla, I got an email from her saying that she had contracted some kind of stomach flu and wouldn't be able to see me.
Mm.
And I only found out, so that was April of 2012. She died in July, complete surprise to me. Mm-hmm. I got the call before the rest of the world knew from her assistant. But when I talked to Tam about it, she said, yes, yeah, she really wanted to see you, but she just didn't have the energy that day.
Huh.
And so she made up that story. And, you know, it just makes me feel really bad because I would have certainly wanted a chance to see her one more time and to say goodbye. And I certainly would have kept the secret. But that's the way she chose to do it. And my feeling is that when you're in that situation, you get to make all the rules.
Yeah. And pancreatic cancer is just one of those things moves so quickly.
It really does.
Yeah.
Well, 17 months, and, you know, she went through, she had chemo, she had radiation. She had that truly awful surgery called the Whipple surgery, mm-hmm. which was a multi-hour procedure, and she came through it pretty well, but the cancer, I guess, was just too far advanced.
As we said, she... nobody knew that she was lesbian and in a relationship for 27 years until her obituary. How did she actually meet Tam, though? You said that they had met before when they were on the tennis tour.
Tennis circuit together, yeah. Right. They met, you know, the tennis circuit turns out, as a child, I went to summer camp. And I probably made my best friends in the world at summer camp mm-hmm. because somehow I was lucky enough to be, you know, out in the countryside and sharing all kinds of wonderful moments, and you just bond with people in a wonderful way. Sally did that, and a lot of women did that on the tennis circuit. They were traveling around the country, spending all day at someone's club or at some place, and when they didn't have a match, they were playing cards or hanging out together, and it was just a wonderful, healthy way to grow up and live your life. So I discovered that a lot of the women on the circuit, a lot of those women are still, were still Sally and Tam's friends. Sally and Tam were part of that group. As I say, they were teenagers, and they were just buddies. They were just pals. But, you know, when Sally flew in 1983, her first mission, when she became the first American woman in space, she was married to a man, to Steve Hawley, another astronaut. But Tam and a group of the other tennis girls had all been invited to the launch, which was just Sally being friends.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just good pals. It was a couple years later when Sally was in Atlanta. Tam was living in Atlanta. And they had seen each other once or twice. And one night they went out to dinner and it just happened. And I think, again, Sally's never talked about this. There are no notes. There are no documents. She was still married at the time. And I think she was obviously making some decisions about who she was and what she wanted for the rest of her life. And once she and Tam got together, you know, that was it for a good long time.
One of the things that was surprising was she had a relationship while she was in college with a woman named Molly.
Right.
And
Molly had never revealed this publicly before. It's in the book. And it's a very, I'd like to know what you thought of that relationship. I found it very interesting and very revealing. What did you think about it?
What I thought about it, you explain later in the book when you said when she and Tam got together, Tam was ready to commit herself for life, and Sally could only give her a 5-year commitment.
Right, because that's all Sally did.
That's all she did. She did things in 5 years.
Don't you want to choke her at that moment?
Uh-huh.
What do you mean? You can't commit for more than 5 years.
Right, right. You know, but no.
I've had too many dates with men like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's very common.
Yeah, she could see ahead five years, and Tam would keep asking her, okay, you ready to renew now? So I guess that makes a lot of sense. as to how she viewed that relationship with Molly. She's going to be in college. College will be over, and then we'll decide what we're doing as far as career, as far as relationship, as far as anything. So it actually did make sense.
Right. And after all, they were young. They were in college. Mm-hmm. And Molly says she felt the same way. I said, were you in love with each other? She said, yeah, we told each other we were in love. I said, did you think you would be together forever? And Molly said to me, no, I assumed we would get through this, and then I would get married and have children and have a life. And that was Molly's position. I have no idea how Sally viewed it at that point. But before Molly, there had been a boyfriend. After Molly, there was a long-term boyfriend as well. Mm-hmm. And then she married Steve, and then after that, she wound up with Sam.
How long were she and Steve married? I forgot.
5 years.
5 years, okay. Makes sense.
Yep.
She only committed herself
exactly.
to him.
I hadn't thought about that.
Yep.
Good for you,
yep.
Yes.
Yep, 5 years.
5-year plan.
And then it was time to do something else. Did they remain friends?
Sally and Steve?
Yeah.
Yes, they did. They did, and although Sally never said to Steve that she had left him for Tam. Sally never told Steve that she was living with Tam. He found out about it through other sources. Steve is very happily married and only wished Sally well, but they never had that conversation.
That's interesting.
It just makes me sad, you know, and I think that's more than just privacy, because when Sally was married to Steve, when she was interviewed, she always made it clear there was a husband in her life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wasn't trying to hide that she had a husband. She did not want any reporters, except for me, because I was a personal friend, in the house.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't want anyone hanging around and spending time with them. But she always, you know, claimed him, is a psychological term, I think, as her mate. And it just makes me sad that she couldn't do that with Tam. Although there is no indication that it caused Sally any angst or any anxiety whatsoever. So, you know, you can't judge somebody by your own standards. I just selfishly wish I had been able to share their life together. It would have been something I would have enjoyed, and I think they would have as well.
Sure. And I was wondering if her mentioning Steve in any kind of interview was something that NASA kind of coached them to do.
I must tell you, there was a rumor. There was buzz among the some of the retired astronauts I spoke to who said, well, you know, we thought maybe she married Steve because they wanted her to be married, not having anything to do with gay or straight. We thought NASA wanted her to be married when she flew. They didn't want a single woman flying with a boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, who knows if they were all telling the truth, but all of the NASA management I spoke to said absolutely not. There was never any pressure on her whatsoever to do that. And, in fact, Sally had moved to NASA once she got named as an astronaut candidate with her boyfriend, and NASA moved his belongings as well, and they lived together openly.
Huh.
Mm. So it's a tough one to pin down.
Because one thing NASA always did was kind of sanitize astronaut biographies. They usually didn't mention, a lot of them were divorced. That was never mentioned.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that dates from the Mercury days, Mercury, Gemini, Apollo days. No question, you're absolutely right about that. And I think NASA probably adored the fact that they were married.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't get any evidence of any real specific pressure from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
There was no conversation that was reported to me or recalled to me that might have led her to do that.
You know, and sometimes that kind of pressure kind of is unspoken. It's just the culture of a corporation and that
I don't
been
deny
it.
That at all. You're absolutely right. That may have been it. On the other hand, Steve says, I thought we got married because we loved each other.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting that, you know.
We're running out of time, but can we talk about, I guess, what's Sally Ride's legacy? Have there been like a couple schools named after her, or at least one school?
There's a couple schools named for her. There is an impact crater on the moon named for her. There's a research vessel, a boat, a ship that's about to be named for her. She has been she played herself on the TV show Touched by an Angel, and of course the president named her a winner of the Presidential Medal of Freedom
Nice.
Earlier, which is, you know, quite wonderful.
So she won't be forgotten.
I beg your pardon?
So she won't be forgotten.
No way she'll be forgotten. And I think it goes back to that first flight, which is millions of people, particularly women, particularly young women, translated Sally's bold journey into their own tickets to success. And they thought, if she can do that, I can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
If that door is open, every door could be open to me. And I think that image of her is what remains. That's the sort of psychic image. And then there's the company she started, which has touched the lives of millions of little girls and little boys. It's all aimed at middle school children mm-hmm. around the country, and trying to get them to be interested in, to stick with, to commit to science, math, technology, engineering as a future career. Sally deeply believes that is the only future for the planet, is if we deal with science and if we get kids interested in science so they can manage the huge problems we're going to have here.
Yep.
This is a woman who loved being in space, but when she did, she looked down at planet Earth. She saw the thin blue line of the atmosphere encircling the Earth. She always called it as if someone had taken a royal blue crayon and drawn it around the globe. And she said that's all there was. This is such a fragile world we live on and in. We've got to get more science. We've got to, in her words, make science cool again. And I think from the lives she has touched, that is going to happen.
When she was about to leave NASA, or just before she did, she wrote a report recommending where NASA should go, and she thought NASA's best use was to explore Earth.
Absolutely.
Rather than going out
to Mars.
She embraced
the concept of what was called mission to planet Earth. The idea being that space is a perfect platform to look back at Earth and start dealing with the issues we have here and solving some of our problems, which science can handle.
Mm-hmm.
And she championed that all of her life after what was known as the Ride Report. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Her sister, you don't mention this earlier in the book, but I think I got this from one of the pictures. And anyway, her sister became a minister.
Right.
And was...
That's a great story. When Sally was named as an astronaut, their mother, a bear, was studying to be a minister, and Joyce, the wonderful, witty Joyce Ride, said, one of them will get to heaven.
Hmm. That's a great line.
Bear was ordained as a minister a few months after Sally was chosen as an astronaut. You're absolutely right.
But in 1996, she was she defrocked, or...?
She had a problem because she... Bear was married. Her nickname growing up, which Sally gave her, was Bear. Her real name is Karen, but she officially now is Bear. I think people listening get a little surprised. What person's name is Bear? Bear Ride was married, has two grown children, now has a grandchild. But she at one point determined that she also was gay and entered a relationship with another woman. They are now married. And when Bear came out, yes, she... defrocked, I think, is probably the wrong way to put it, but she was essentially forced out of her position with a church, and that was too bad.
Mm-hmm. So what is she doing now?
She's doing some freelance ministering. I'm not sure quite how you say it. Doing a lot of writing and consulting and living a very happy life.
Oh, good. And is she also in California?
She's also in California.
Still in California.
Near Los Angeles. And she and her wife live in a community that is very friendly to all sorts of people, and they're in terrific shape.
Hmm. One of the things Laurent alluded to earlier, and I was going to ask about this, but we went on to something else. One of the Russian astronauts, her name was Svetlana Savitskaya, she and Sally had met, but they had to meet secretly. Why did they have to meet secretly?
Sally was this is so much... a part of Sally's personality. This is such a quintessential Sally story. She was on her post-flight press tour in the summer of 1983, and one of the places that they went, she and her pilot, Rick Hauck, and both of their spouses, went to Budapest for a meeting of some international astronautical society. And this was right after, some of your listeners may remember, a horrible incident where a Korean Airlines jetliner, civilian airliner, was shot down because it theoretically had wandered, allegedly, into Soviet airspace. And it was shot down by the Soviets, and a number of people, everybody lost their lives, including, if I'm not mistaken, a U.S. congressman.
A congressman from Georgia, yeah.
Right. And so this was our Cold War enemy, and the wall was up. I mean, no talking to the Russians. So Sally and Rick and Steve and Rick's then wife were all under instructions, no fraternizing with the enemy. Go to this conference, wave the flag, say wonderful things about shuttle, but no pictures of you toasting the Russian Soviet cosmonauts with vodka. We're having a real standoff with them. And everybody obeyed the rules until suddenly at one point Sally meets at a gathering Svetlana, the woman who had been the second woman in space, exactly Sally's age, one of three women who had ever been in space, and she wanted to talk to her. So,
Sure. And I got why they'd want to meet each other. It was the secret part that I was putting the background to that. Yeah.
Sally makes it clear to the translator, the interpreter, who was also a cosmonaut, but he was okay because he was Hungarian. She makes it clear to him that she would love to spend some time with Svetlana and that he, the translator, should do with that information as he pleased.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, he sets up a secret rendezvous. Sally, at midnight, leaves the hotel and is taken in a car, and it really was a dark and stormy night, and goes to the apartment of the translator, and she is scared to death because she's thinking, oh my gosh, there's going to be a photographer there. I'm going to ruin U.S.-Soviet relations forever. I'll never fly again. On and on. What's going to happen? She gets to his apartment. Her first reaction is, oh my God, pictures of rockets on the wall, they're just like us.
Mm-hmm.
She walks into the apartment. She realizes these are kindred souls. She and Svetlana, it's a very private meeting, have a wonderful get-together with some other folks for another 4 or 5 hours. 5 in the morning, they all leave there, happy as little clams. No one was ever the wiser, and Sally had a friend for life.
Huh. That's a great story.
Oh, it is.
Lynn, we're out of time. You're going to be here in Dallas this week.
I am.
Where are you going to be? Do you know?
I'm going to be at an event on the SMU campus on
Wednesday
evening. Wednesday evening, yes. And it's my understanding is it's a public event. It's a large hall, and I'd love to see as many people come as want to come. It would be fun. I'm going to speak about Sally. I'm going to be signing books. And I'll talk to anybody that wants to about what's going on.
Great. I'll post it on our Facebook page. I'll get the actual details of where and what time.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you for joining us.
Lynn, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Enjoyed it a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that brings us to the end of another Lambda Weekly. Do you want to take the book?
Absolutely. I'm going to read this.
I just finished it this morning. I really enjoyed it. The name of the book, Sally Ride, America's First Woman in Space. That brings us to the end of today's show, and we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly next week. Happy Father's Day, Laurent.
Thank you.